Thank you. Welcome back, colleagues. We are now going to resume the next session with a different witness. I just need to check first if we have all our things sorted out. Mr. Matabuche, are you connected?
I'm here, Chairperson.
Oh,
I'm
thank
here.
You.
You can see me. I can just open my camera. I'm here.
Thank you. Thank you.
My stable
welcome back. Welcome back. Thank you. I can see your stable. Yes, thank you. Welcome back. We appreciate your time for this short notice. Thank you for that. I will now immediately, without wasting any time, hand over to Advocate Mpofu to interact with you. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Just give me 1 minute.
In the meantime, please be reminded that you're still under oath, Mr. Matabuche. Sorting himself out. He'll be ready just now.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. Good afternoon, Mr. Matabuche.
Good afternoon, Wenbofu and PP and the legal team. Good afternoon.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for availing yourself at short notice. Yesterday we had wanted to call you today anyway so that we could speed up things. But we will go for as long as you are willing to let us go today. If there's a need to go slightly over 5 o'clock, will you be able to do so?
Yes, I think it's by 6 that we're in both.
The latest, okay, thanks. We'll try. Thank you very much. What we need to do, you have been called effectively, according to the evidence leaders at least, to deal with 4 separate reports, those that were raised with you at the beginning of your evidence, and those are the CR17 Busafa reports and judgments, and then there's the so-called rogue unit judgment and report. And to that extent, your evidence coincides with that of Ms. Mbuyana. And then there was an issue of 382. And then, of course, the Pillay pension matter. Can you confirm that you were involved in all those matters to whatever extent?
Yes, sir. When both I was involved as the chief investigator that supervised the investigators who dealt with the 3 matters, that is the Irving Play pension matter, the SAR so-called rogue unit, and 382 report. However, Busasa was the lead investigator for the MEA.
Oh, I see. So, yes. in the other three, you had you were supervising the actual investigators and or senior investigators, and in Busafa, you were yourself the lead investigator.
Correct.
Perfect. Thank you, sir. I was not aware of that distinction. Right. Well, in that case, then I'm going to start with dealing with the Busafa CR17 matter, but in that sequence, if you don't mind, and we'll see how far we go until such time that we have to go, or if you cannot go any longer, and so on. And then we will deal with the other three. But before I do any of that, we need, I always say to the legally trained witnesses, as you know, context is everything in law, correct?
Correct, Dr. Mpoku.
Yes, so we always try to paint the context of your evidence so that even the members know upfront where we're going, and who is this person in front of us. Unfortunately, this time, the evidence leaders have done most of that work of situating where you fit in the big picture. But just for the sake of, without repetition, and I will ask you questions of that nature to save time in a leading session, either because the material is not controversial or because in any event, some of it might have already come through from Ms. Mvuyane and it was not disputed. You follow that?
I do, Agbenboko, I do.
Thank you very much, sir. All right. Now, it's already been registered here that in terms of the what I call the pecking order, in a particular investigation, ideally, and we know that this doesn't happen with each and every investigation, but ideally you'd have the investigator, senior investigator, chief investigator, that is somebody like you, leading the actual investigation team, correct?
That is correct.
And then above you would then be the executive manager who reports to the COO or has a dotted line to the COO, and then the public protector, correct?
That is correct.
Right. Now, we also established with Ms. Mvuyane that the person who is, with the exception of the Busafa exception that you just told us, the person who would be quote unquote on the ground in respect of such an investigation would be the investigator himself or herself, correct?
It is correct.
Yes, and obviously then they would report to you and check with you as and when your intervention is necessary. And you said something quite important. I think you were asked by Advocate Bawa about the reporting line. Can you just confirm that when it comes to drafts, the investigator can sometimes interact directly even with the PP or the EM without necessarily coming through you. But when it comes to a final, let's say Section 79 or a final report, then it must go through all the stages that we've already described until it is signed by the PP. Is that correct?
In fact, it works both ways in a way. In that when the investigator starts with submission of investigation plans, document request letters, all of which have to be submitted through a memo that is prepared by the investigator, and then that goes to the CI, which is me, and the investigation manager to go up to the PP. So that process, that flow of investigation applies both union for the subpoenas, for the 7-9s and so on. It depends, as I was saying, yes. It depends on the nature of the complaint.
Yes. Thank you. Yes. Sorry, I forgot to mention. Yeah. Even the subpoenas, because they also, in as far as the legislation is concerned, they are issued by the public protector, but as you say, they then would travel that whole journey. The public protector herself might not know who must be subpoenaed at whatever time, but once you've made those decisions, then it travels until she has signed the subpoena or a Section 79 or a final report, correct?
Correct, I will.
Good. Right. And you also made the statement, you said an investigating diary or investigation diary is the life cycle of the investigation. And I suppose that in that life cycle, we can also include the investigation plan as, if you like, the lifeblood of the investigation or the blueprint. And Ms. Mviana explained to us what an investigation plan is. But would you agree with that summary?
Yes, that is correct. I would agree with it.
And for the purposes of this committee, would you confirm the evidence of Ms. Mviana that in actual fact, the deadline or the original deadlines, well, deadlines might change from time to time. If you have what in this committee is called a living document. But the original living document, if you like, is the investigation plan, which is drafted by the investigator himself or herself. In other words, the first deadlines are self-imposed in that document, correct?
It is correct.
And then, of course, you have, we now know, even those of us who have never been to the Office of the Public Protector, we now know that there are all sorts of meetings, dashboard, wool bench, us team, what have you. And in all those meetings, then the deadlines might be adjusted. If I don't meet a particular deadline, I might get some serious talking too. But if my explanations are correct, then the deadlines get changed. Even so, now the deadlines become negotiated rather than self-imposed, correct?
That is correct, everyone.
Yes. Good. Can you just very briefly, I know that you are one of the most experienced investigators, having started working in this sector even before 1994, when your particular office was located in the homeland or before 1994. Can you just tell us, without getting into much detail, the various stages which you have played in this sector up to where you are now as chief investigator?
When I started in the ombudsman, I was a junior investigator. Then I became an investigator, I think, around the 90s. In 1993, I became a regional manager in Mabubani, where I had to move from Mabati to Mabubani to manage a regional office, which I was a manager for until 2012, when the office was closed, and I was relocated along with the staff to head office in 2012, I think November, where I became a senior investigator under the GGI, which is Governance and Integrity. And I was a senior investigator from 2012 up until 2018. I think June, when I was appointed the chief investigator, the position that I am still holding today. Thank you.
Good. Thank you very much. And to cut a long story short, you have therefore been there throughout all the public protectors, from the first one Advocate Selby Pakwa to Advocate Mushwana, Advocate Matonsela, and now Advocate Mukwebane, correct?
Correct.
Good. Well, I won't even ask you. You probably don't even know how many investigations or reports you have been involved in. But we can accept that it's a lot in that period, correct?
Quite a lot, yes.
Yeah. And that wealth of experience must have contributed to you being identified as what you've called the lead investigator in such a big and serious matter as CR17 Busasa, correct?
I believe so, I think so.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, you don't have to be modest.
No, the reason is that I believe so is because that has been happening to me even before I came to Brabant in Kenya.
Yes, okay, that you got the, what sometimes is called the graveyard shift, that you would get some of the heavy lifting.
Yes.
No, fair enough, thank you. Right, okay, we will come to that particular report just now. Now, the other thing that you said, which for me really characterizes the evidence that some of the issues I'm going to deal with you, if it was a court case and not an inquiry, after that answer, I would have just said, well, that's it, I have no further questions. But unfortunately, we're in an inquiry, so we have to inquire into the factual issues. But you said last week to this committee, and I'm quoting you verbatim, we may fall short, but we do our best. We endeavor to be fair, and we do our best. We work without fear, favor, or prejudice, notwithstanding some of the comebacks. Do you remember that?
I remember that exactly.
All right. Thank you. So your evidence, both in through this questioning and probably when we summarize and argue at the end of the case, I will be put under that that theme. Now, I put to Ms. Mviane yesterday a proposition that if all the horrible things that the public protector is being accused of in relation to these reports, let's say these four that concern you, namely that she was deliberately dishonest, biased, out to get Mr. Ramaphosa or out to get Mr. Godan and out to whitewash Mr. Mahashula and Mr. Zwane, no matter what they had done, which is the gist of those charges, if that was indeed the case, she could not have carried that out without, to use the word loosely, recruiting somebody like you, Ms. Mviana, into that conspiracy, if it were going to be successful. Would you agree with that?
Yes, I would definitely.
And for the record, were you ever part of any scheme, conspiracy, vendetta, to target a particular focus person of an investigation, such as the ones that I've mentioned, or were you ever aware of such an intention being harbored by the public protector?
No, I wouldn't have been at all, especially because when, if I may just elaborate, when we dealt
yes.
with matters at the beginning, we'd consult with the members of parliament who have brought this complaint. As required in terms of us confirming or looking the issues. And I'll be part of those meetings, or the investigation will be part of those meetings. If there were any undertones or any such, I would have known or picked them up for sure. But we were questioning them on why they think were the appropriate institution to be investigate what they were alleging against a particular member of the executive as well.
Thank you. That's quite crucial. Yes, you actually made that very clear. Excuse me, Chair. And I think Ms. Mviane also emphasized that point. When you the first thing we do is to consult with the complainant. This is what you are saying now, and I think as a lawyer, you and I know that you cannot pursue a case, whether it's a criminal case, whether it's a disciplinary hearing, whether it's an impeachment process, without hearing from the complainant, correct?
Correct.
And I think that's what you're telling the committee now, that in the case of the public protector's office, a similar process is followed. In other words, when even before the public protector could execute her quote-unquote conspiracy, she would have to contend with the fact that you and not her have to do the screening of the complaint with the complainant, and only if you, not her, is satisfied that this complaint even merits being taken any further, then the show gets on the road. Is that a fair summary?
That's a fair summary, yes.
Yeah. So I think what you're saying is even taking it further than what Ms. Mviane told the committee, in that you're saying that not only would you have to be a member, quote-unquote, of that conspiracy, but you would have to be a very important one, because without you, whatever conspiracy the public protector might be harboring could not be carried out, because you would have said that this is a nonsensical thing. There's nothing here. There's not even a prima facie sign. It's clearly just a witch hunt, and we should not waste the time of the taxpayer on the money of the taxpayer with it. What I'm saying is that you obviously, if you are a member of the conspiracy, then you wouldn't say that. You would say, no, let's go ahead, because this is Mr. Ramaphosa, the one we've been looking for, or Mr. Godan. Understand that?
Yes, correct. But EMEA has an executive ethics code complaint. We don't have an option not to investigate.
Good. Good. Yes. Okay. Therefore, no. Fair enough. So that question that I just asked you now would apply, obviously, to the non-EMEA complaints, which, such as the Pillay complaint. The Pillay complaint against him, but the one against Godan would have been EMEA. What I'm saying is that the discretion for you to proceed or not to proceed applies to the non-EMEA complaints, correct?
Yes, correct. But those ones that are all the SAM, which are special attention matters, would be complex and crucial ones that then we discuss and we hold meetings in the presence of the health director, despite one of them not being a mayor.
Yes, no, okay, fair enough. Yes, I think one of the earlier witnesses told us about the so-called SAM. So for the purposes of Honorable Ngola, the SAM are called, what's the full special what?
Special attention seeking matters.
Okay, special attention matters. Okay, now, otherwise known as SAM, Mr. Ngola. Okay, thank you. So, once again, thank you for that qualification. So, both EMEA and SAM matters would, firstly, with the EMEA matters, you have no option because the legislation says you must investigate. But with the SAM matters, that decision would be taken in conjunction with the public protector, correct?
Correct, yes.
Thank you. All right. Now, I then just want to take you, you were told last week, so I won't spend much time on this, that your evidence is really relevant for charges 11.3 and 11.4. To save time, I won't read them back to you, because I think Advocate Bauer read them to you, or I read them to Ms. Mbuyana. But in a nutshell, those charges relate to deliberately seeking to avoid making findings against certain people, and deliberately or and deliberately, sorry, avoiding to make such findings against others. You remember that? So do you want me to
I remember. I even remember my response.
Yes. Which, please, can you repeat?
Which was in the negative.
Yes, thank you very much. Yeah. All right. So, as I did with Ms. Mbriana, I have to say this also for the benefit of the members and the members of the public. My questions to you are not necessarily aimed at establishing, for example, that the so-called retirement of Mr. Pillay, which was like a one-minute special where he quote-unquote retired at 12 o'clock and then in 1 minute past 12 he was re-employed. It's not necessarily to show that that was a sham, because I think that should be obvious to anybody. The purpose of your evidence here is to determine whether or not in the process leading up to that so-called retirement, any legal prescripts had been breached. You understand that distinction, correct?
Yes, I do.
And do you agree with that is the emphasis? In other words, you're not here to tell us whether it was a good thing or a bad thing for Mr. Pillay to retire, or to retire to fund the education of his children or whatever he claimed. You are just here to check whether, as far as that retirement is concerned, and even assuming that it was warranted, it breached any law, the PFMA, the Constitution, the Pensions Act, the Public Service Act, and those kinds of prescripts, correct?
Correct.
Right, and that goes for all the other investigations, Busasa. It's not for you to. It's not for you to tell us whether it was a good thing or a bad thing for the funders of the CR17 campaign to give R1 billion or whatever amount for him to become the president of the country and the president of the ANC. Your focus is only whether in receiving those funds, the Executive Ethics Act was breached or any other obligation to declare and that kind of thing. Correct?
Is this correct, Reverend Paul?
Right. All right. Just so that those people who are inclined to send you nasty WhatsApps, they must just know that your job is actually much more boring than trying to accuse anybody of anything. Yours is simply to look at whether the prescripts of our republic have been followed, correct?
That is correct.
Right. And in doing so, it doesn't matter if it's somebody that you like or dislike, whether you like me or the chairperson or anyone else, once a complaint has been raised, you just have to disabuse yourself of that liking or disliking and simply look at whether me or the chairperson followed the rules that bind upon us, and the answer is either yes or no, correct?
It is correct.
Right. Then there's also some interference. I don't know whether it's...
Yeah, we are attending to it with Mr. Ngoma.
Thank you, Chair. Right. Now, I just want to go to the issue of jurisdiction, both broadly speaking, but also in relation, also because it arose in the Busasa matter, which I'm going to start with. It is correct, is it not, that apart from speaking to the complainant, one of the first things to be done, obviously, in any matter, is to determine jurisdiction, correct?
Yes, and we do so by checking the applicable legislation.
Yes, because again, if you come to the examples I was making, let's say the chairperson has transgressed the rules, which of course we know he would never do. But even if he has transgressed them in multiple and daily fashion, very unlikely, then yours would be, it wouldn't matter if he has transgressed them 1,000 times, if indeed you find that you don't have jurisdiction. It's a matter that falls in the hands of the police or someone else. Correct?
It is correct.
Okay. And as these examples are getting more gruesome, I will use someone else, otherwise I'm going to be muted. So the point that I'm simply making is, the complainant, the screening, or what I think Ms. Mviana called the preliminary investigation, involves typically, obviously not in every case, involves speaking to the complainant, but also ensuring that the public protector has jurisdiction in terms of the legislation, as you correctly say. Correct?
It is correct.
and the powers of the public protector are located in Section 6 of the Public Protectors Act. That's really what you are doing. You're just checking against Section 6 and where Section 6.1A is my favorite one, the one that gives the wide ambit of your powers, starting from discourtesy or, you know.
Capricious.
Yes.
Yes.
And discourtesy and capricious conduct, right up to the hardcore stuff like corruption and all that, correct?
That is correct.
Yes. So I was describing it to one judge like that to say that actually the powers are so wide that even if a civil servant just doesn't greet me, I can go and report them to the public protector for being discourteous, correct? Well, I'm sure you haven't had cases like that, but just to make a point, I'm saying that it moves from the mundane to the serious, correct?
That is correct.
Right. Right. And in the case of the Busafa matter, the issue, again, was a serious matter of, let's say, ranging from the failure to declare a gift to possibly criminal conduct in the form of money laundering. Is it some serious business, correct?
That is correct. That is the complainant that put it to us.
Yes, the complainant in that particular case, Mr. Musi Maimane, the then leader of the DA, had, at least in his specific complaint, alluded to the criminal conduct of money laundering, correct?
That is correct.
So, like the Palapala matter, which I know you're not involved in, the most serious allegations also involved the breach of PECA and money laundering statutes of South Africa. Let's not necessarily get technical, correct?
Correct, yeah.
Yes. All right. And either you know this or you don't, but those matters, if proven, would have, in the case of a president of a country in particular, then amounted to, let's say, to be fair, possible impeachable conduct. In other words, if a president of a country was involved in criminality, at least even a first-year student would tell you that that may, and I'm being generous, invoke a further breaches of the Constitution, such as Section 89 of the Constitution, correct?
Correct, yes.
Yes. So the matters were serious not only because of the seriousness of the offenses, but also because of the highness of the office involved, correct?
That is correct, yes.
Right. Thank you. And it is in that context then that I was giving you that compliment, that to be entrusted with such an investigation, I cannot think of a more serious investigation than the Busasa one, other than maybe the Palapala one. So it means that you were one of the people who have demonstrated tea and experience in this area, correct?
Yes, but if you were to remember, I tried to refuse to take it at some point to say I'm swamped and can it go to somebody else.
Thank you, yes. No, I know the feeling, yeah. And she wouldn't take no for an answer. I suppose.
That's why I was in it to the end.
Yes, thank you. All right. Okay, now having laid that basis, then I think it's fair then to say to the members, let's then go to the specifics. Sorry, Chair, I need to... Oh, we're going to have trouble here, Chairperson. I see that the version that I'm using is not properly paginated. Tepo, I don't know if you'll be able to assist me to find the Busafa documents. And I'm looking specifically for the report as well as the Section 7-9 letter. While Tepo and my team are looking for the correct reference, but you can confirm that the report was issued by you and the public protector in
July, I think
19 July 2019, correct?
Yes.
Yes. Thank you. Yes, that's correct. And thank you so much. What's the fan page report? What's that page number? Okay. Sorry, I thought it was me. Just me. Okay. There's no page number. So how do we identify it? We'll use the... We'll use the paragraphs, yeah. I think... Does that mean it hasn't been loaded? That's that... Not paginated. Okay, that's fine. We'll sort that out. We'll check, and we'll just use the paragraph numbers for now. Okay, but for the members to find it, I think at some stage we'll have it paginated. Thanks. Okay, I'll just read snippets, which will give a full picture. If you go to, Pepper, if you can go to paragraph E under the executive summary. Sorry, go to G. Okay, the parts that I'm jumping are the well-known parts where Mr. Maimane posed a question in Parliament about members of the family benefiting and he had a receipt or something, and the President responded to say that he had looked at his son in the eye and so on and so on. And if it turns out that there's an illegality, he'll be the first one to take his son to the police and all that. But the part that I wanted to deal with is Mr. Maimane's complaint, which is covered in G, where Mr. Maimane says, the report says, Mr. Maimane, in his letter attached below, further stated that it is his concern that the rest of the facts reveal that there is possibly an improper relationship existing between President Ramaphosa and his family on the one side and the company, African Global Operations, on the other side. The nature of the payment passing through several intermediaries does not accord with a straightforward donation and raises the suspicion of money laundering. That's there. We've already covered that. The alleged donor is further widely reported to have received billions of rands in state tenders, often in the fashion, or rather, often in irregular fashion. And then what follows there is the actual letter of Mr. Maimane, addressed to Office of the Public Protector, Advocate Busisiwe Mkhwebane. We won't go through that letter, as I say, it's also well known in the public domain. Do you remember that?
Yes, I do have written book.
Right. And just after the letter, Pepo, was Roman 6. Right. After the signature of Mr. Maimane, it is then indicated that another similar complaint was lodged by Mr. Floyd Shibambu, MP of the EFF, Deputy President, as well as an anonymous complaint from a whistleblower on the 28th of June 2019, who is not a member of parliament and therefore precluded from lodging a complaint in terms of EMEA. I then decided to consolidate the two complaints into one investigation for administrative purposes. And then it spells out what Mr. Shibambu was complaining about, which is largely similar. Also, I won't bore the committee with that. But the point I wanted to highlight there is a point that was made yesterday with Ms. Mviana, namely that even though there was a complaint on against the president, which came from a member of the public or whoever, the anonymous complainant, that one had to be discarded because it did not come from a member of parliament, correct?
It is correct.
All right. Next, just go to the next letter, just to show it. We won't read it as well. Okay, so that's the complaint letter on the, just go further down. Yeah, that's the complaint letter on the letterhead of the Office of the Chief Whip of the EFF, signed by Mr. N.F. Shibambu, MP. So that was the second valid complaint, correct?
It is correct.
Right. And again, I won't go into the gory details of how you got there, but just to give a flavor to the members of your findings, if you go to the paragraph AA, that's just, it's like double A. Put it down. Put it down. Yeah. No, further down. That's after F in that series. Yeah. Okay, so I'm jumping just to, as I say, just to give a flavor of what the findings were. One of your findings was that the allegation that on 6 November 2018, during the question session in Parliament, President Ramaphosa deliberately misled the National Assembly is sustained, correct?
That is correct.
And then let's just jump to DD. Please, Chapa. No, sorry, start with CC. Because that's important. We're going to go. You remember one of the controversial issues, both in terms of the jurisdiction and the criticism that the president leveled on the public protector, had something to do with the question as to whether he personally benefited from these donations. You remember that?
I remember, I do.
Yeah. I think that's one of the main issues. And then at CC it says, you say, and again, like with Ms. Mbiyana, when I say you, I know that the report is that of the public protector, but also I'm using you in plural because you were the, shall we call it, the drafter and the in this particular case also the lead investigator. Yeah. Okay.
That's correct.
Thank you. And in fact, you know, I prefer your word. It's even better. You were the drafter, as Ms. Mbiyana explained. It, actually, it's you, the investigating team, that drafts these documents. Of course, the PP has the final say, and she makes changes and all that, and it's, she owns it. She's not trying to run away from the ownership of the report. But it is drafted by people like yourself, correct?
It is correct.
Right. Okay. Now, here you then say, President Ramaphosa, as a presidential candidate of the ANC political party, received campaign contributions which benefited him in his personal capacity. He was therefore duty-bound to declare such financial benefit accruing to him from the campaign pledges. Failure to disclose the said material benefits, including a donation from AGO, that's African Global Operations, I think, otherwise known as BUSASA, correct?
Correct, yes.
And then you say that is a breach of the code of ethics, correct?
That is correct.
Yes. And then a DD is another important finding you made where you say, I have evidence which indicates that some of the money collected through the CR17 campaign trust account was also transferred into the Ramaphosa Trust Foundation account. So those are two of the crucial findings in respect of that finding that we referred to earlier in AA, correct?
That is correct.
Right. And then let's go to the next AA, that is under C. I'll also just read the finding, and then I won't read the rest of the narrative. There you say, the allegation that there is an improper relationship between the President Ramaphosa and his family on the one side, and the company African Global Operations on the other side, due to the nature of the 500,000 payment passing through several intermediaries instead of a straight donation towards the CR17 campaign, thus raising suspicion of money laundering, has merit. Now, I want to, you remember that finding?
I do, I heard it before.
Yes. The emphasis on that finding is just to emphasize the fact that you knew your limits. So you did not find the president guilty of money laundering, and all you could say is that it raises suspicion. After that, it would have to be the NPA or the police or whoever who has to take it forward, correct?
That is correct.
So even if you actually had a photograph of the money laundering, it would be outside of your jurisdiction to quote-unquote find him guilty. You would have to refer it to the appropriate authorities, correct?
That is correct.
All right. And that is why, if you go to the remedial action, let's go just further down. This is the summary. This is not the remedial action section, but just the summary thereof in your executive summary. What you recommend, having made those findings, is really quite straightforward. another AA.
If you give us the page number at the bottom of the page.
I don't have that.
Is it not at the bottom right-hand corner of your
draft? It isn't. But it's, you remember the one that I just read, the DD? Yeah, it's just two or three paragraphs after that. No, go further down. There's another AA. Okay, your numbering is okay. Good. Thanks. Sorry, it's not your fault. I think the numbering is, if you don't have the page numbers, yeah, it repeats itself. Thanks to Chapel. So, so in that AA, it says within 30 working days of receipt of this report, the Speaker of the National Assembly, this is a remedial action directed at the Speaker of the National Assembly. Within 30 working days of receipt of this report, refer His Excellency President Ramaphosa's violation of the Code of Ethical Conduct and disclosure of members' interests of the Assembly and Permanent Council members to the Joint Committee on Ethics and Members' Interests for consideration in terms of the provision of paragraph 10 of the code. Again, my emphasis there is that you could not yourself say, for example, that the president has breached the declaration code and therefore he must be suspended from parliament or whatever it is. That's not your province. Yours would be to send it to the appropriate structures of parliament for consideration, as it says, correct?
It is correct.
And if they find him guilty or not guilty, that's not your business. You'd have then referred the matter to the appropriate structures, correct?
It is correct.
Yes. Because, again, that is something that is not well understood, I think, by many people. For example, in the CX report, I know you were not involved in that, that if you're recommending for Parliament to look into an amendment of a constitution or a statute or whatever, you are not prescribing if the consideration doesn't pass the two-thirds majority or whatever the prescript is, then that's the end of it. You are out of it as the public protector. It is that institution that must then process the thing, correct?
That is correct.
Yes. That you, in the public protector, you are not mad people who can prescribe that the constitution must be amended no matter what, whether it's 10% or 67%, doesn't matter. It must just be amended. Yours is to propose, correct?
That is correct.
Right. Right. Then, just again to round off that, I won't read the other things about the members and publication of the donations received by the president. Oh yeah, no, let's read CC. You then said that within 30 working days of receipt of this report, the National Assembly Speaker must demand publication of all donations received by President Ramaphosa because, as the then Deputy President, he was bound to declare such financial interests into the members' registrable interest register in the spirit of accountability and transparency. Correct?
It is correct.
Okay. I've already made the point there. That's another referral there. And then coming to the issue of money laundering, the criminal activity, alleged criminal activity on the part of the president, this is again to confirm what you and I had discussed earlier. You said within 30 working days of receipt of this report, the National Director of Public Prosecutions is to take note of the observations contained in paragraph 17.3.1, as well as the recommendations contained in paragraph 77.3.3 of this report, and in line with section 64C, Roman 1 of the Public Protector Act, conduct further investigation into the prima facie evidence of money laundering as uncovered during my investigation and deal with it accordingly. Again, without sounding like a broken record, you couldn't find him guilty or take him to Hoshimampuru prison or anything like that. All you could do was to ask the NPA to investigate this further and either charge him or decide not to charge him or whatever, and the court to also convict him or acquit him or whatever. That would be out of your hands, correct?
That is correct.
And then lastly, you said the National Commissioner of the South African Police Services, within 30 day working days of receipt to investigate criminal conduct against Mr. Kevin Watson, the late Mr. Kevin Watson, for violation of Section 11(3) of the Public Protector Act by lying under oath. And that was in relation to the conflicting evidence, affidavit evidence of Mr. Watson as to exactly who he gave money to and how many people and how many candidates of the ANC had given money to, those kinds of issues, correct?
It is correct.
Right. Now, I'm just skimming through the report to get the highlights because we're not here to review the report. But the crucial issue I'm driving to is all these findings, recommendations, what have you, were they based on your conspiracy to get into Mr. Ramaphosa, or do you have anything against him, or were they based on the evidence before you?
They were based on the evidence of Rainbow. Having the file on my left, on which all of this that we put in the report was gleaned from. We took it from the file, put it in the 7-9 in the report.
Thank you very much. And I'm glad you have it there. You are lucky. The rest of South Africa don't have access to that file. It has been sealed. But be that as it may. The point I really wanted to make is that you, and I don't even want to know whether this is true or not, but you personally might be a big supporter of President Ramaphosa, and you might like him and be a member of the disease called Ramaphoria or whatever. But whether you like him or not personally, you would have to do your professional duty and follow the evidence, correct?
That is correct.
All right. Now, let's then get to that big bundle that is sitting on your left there. And unfortunately, we can't at this stage deal with it in much detail. Some of the issues will be dealt with when Public Protector testifies, which is around the corner. But for now, can you just confirm to this committee that particularly the email evidence, you were lucky enough to be provided with email evidence that showed the movements of the money in some minute detail, correct?
Yes.
Maybe not all the money that was donated, but you would have been able to see that there was 20 million rand which was transferred by, I was going to say Mr. Chabalala, but he's not a billionaire here, by somebody who's a big business person, and then that 20 million rand got into the account, and then half of it went to buy t-shirts, the other one to hire buses and all that. I'm just making it up, but you would be able to trace some of the money to that minute detail. Recipient, functions, date of distribution, and maybe another donation from the Mr. or Ms. X. Is that a fair summary of the type of evidence that is contained in those emails on your laptop?
Yes, that is subpoenaed information, if I may say.
Yes. Right. And so this issue, which I said is very central, was central to this question as to whether President Ramaphosa, A, benefited personally, and B, knew of the movement of the money, the conclusions you reached, which we referred to earlier, were based on that evidence, correct?
It is correct, Reverend Bob.
Right. And and more crucially, we'll come to the court judgment, because these proceedings here are mainly based on court judgments. The evidence showed not only that President Ramaphosa must have known about the money movements, but that some of the money A was even donated by him, so he obviously knew about that one, and also some of it went through his trust, correct?
It is correct.
All right. And some of the people you spoke to included the people, there's somebody who plays a role called Mr. Berjani Chauke, who was doubling up first as Mr. Ramaphosa's advisor in his presidential office by day, but at other times he was the chairperson or manager, and quote unquote, of the CR17 campaign, correct?
I think if I may go correct, we met with campaign managers, I think, and he was one of them.
Yes, yes. No, I understand that. You met him in that capacity as a campaign manager, but I'm saying then and now he is also, or even in this documentation, he was described as Mr. Ramaphosa's advisor, in other words, in his government capacity.
Correct.
You may not have known that, yes, but he was, let's just, for your purposes, he was described as his advisor, correct?
That is correct.
Okay. That's fine. No, we'll deal with the details later with the public protector. Right. All right, we'll come back to then. Oh, yeah, sorry. Just for the sake of completion. Yes. There's a long list of documents which we won't go through. Sorry, it's 3.4, Right. Sorry. Right. Okay, I'm jumping the correspondence and all that. But there's a lot of it. I think there are like 36 items. But there was, we, at least even those of us who don't work in that space by now, we know what this Section 7-9 letter is. You issued a Section 7-9 letter. Just go slightly up. Thanks. I wasn't sure myself which one is up or down. That's good. All right. Section 7-9 letter issued to His Excellency President Cyril Ramaphosa, MP, dated 30th May 2019, correct?
Yes.
And, and his response thereto, again, we now know what that is. But the point I was getting to is 4.3.4, which is... okay, sorry. Yeah, if you remember, we see that the subpoena was dated, not subpoena, the 7-9 was dated 30th May 2019, and the response was towards the end of June 2019. Would, whether from memory or from those dates, would you remember if the president then asked for an extension, which must have been granted?
Yes, he did ask for an extension.
And was it granted?
And it was granted. It was granted, yes.
Okay. And who would have granted that extension? The public protector or yourself?
The public protector, obviously, because we converted it with them.
Yes. Thank you. Anyway, okay, fine. Then the issue is, was the people you interviewed, we'll just skim through quickly, because Mr. Petros Fenter, I suppose, works for Busasa, interviews with Mr. Kevin Watson and Natasha Olifir on 25 March 2019. Interview conducted with Mrs. Beja Nichauke and James McCarthy. That's another leader of the CR17 campaign, 6 March 2019. Interview conducted with Ms. Donay Nicole, that's also someone who works at the president's office in the presidency now, but was also a leader of the CR17 campaign. And then interviews with some lawyers, Mr. Faba and Mr. Krobler. Those are the people who handled the money. And then meeting with His Excellency President Ramaphosa on the 1st February 2019 and 30 May 2019. Is that an indication that you held more than one, you held two meetings with the President himself?
Yes, that is correct. The first one was to discuss the, I think, the initial letter of inquiry on the matter. Uh-huh. And the second instance is when we delivered the Section 7-9 to his office. Because the team has felt that it would be courteous for us not to send the sheriff or the messenger, but to deliver and take the president to the Section 7-9, which the PP did.
Right. Yes. And we have the recording of that meeting. I don't know if it was uploaded, but if it hasn't. It hasn't. It will be uploaded before the public protector's evidence. That's fine. But it just confirms what you've said for the sake of completion, that it was a matter of protocol. If it was me who was accused of all these things, you would have just sent the Section 7-9 with the sheriff or the police or whoever. But because you were dealing with the president of the country, the protocol demanded that as a matter of respect, the public protector herself took these documents and delivered them to the president, correct?
It is correct.
Right. And there was no legal obligation on her to do so. She could have sent the sheriff or anybody like that, but it was just a courtesy, correct?
That is correct.
Now,
Mr. Matabuke.
Sorry.
Mr. Matabuke.
Che? I'm here, Che.
Yes, there's something we don't know whether it's a document you're paging closer to the mic because we can see your mic.
Sorry, Che. Is the document, sorry, Che. Sorry.
Okay.
Thank you. Is it that big? It's making noise for the whole country. That's still the document. All right. Now, I'm just jumping to 5.1.10.9.6 of the report. This is now coming from the meetings. Oh, sorry, did you attend the meetings with the president?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
Along with other senior officials of the offices.
And the PP?
Yes.
Thanks. Okay. Also, who else was there, if you remember? I think Ms. Baloyi.
Yes, Ms. Baloyi, Ms. Mohaladi, Mr. Sahari, and I think the late Mr. Sonyembe and the PPSPA, I think, if I recall.
Yes, thank you. And then at 5.1.10.9.6, you say that President Ramaphosa also stated that upon returning to his office in 10 days, okay, this is now after the old man, my man, debacle, after he answered the question in Parliament. Stated that upon returning to his office in 10 days following the question session that he was informed by one of his advisors, Ms. Donne Nicole, that the account that Mr. Mayomane had referred to EFG2 was an attorney's trust account that had been used by the CR17 campaign to raise funds for the campaign to advocate for his election as president of the ANC at the organization's 54th National Conference in 2017. Remember that?
Uh-oh.
Oh, okay, sir. I thought the file had blocked the whole thing. Okay. Then the next one is, according to President Ramaphosa, a deliberate decision. This is very crucial because this was the main defense. According to President Ramaphosa, a deliberate decision had been taken by himself and those leading the campaign that he would not be involved in fundraising, even as he would address meetings and have a few dinners with potential funders. These meetings and dinners with potential funders were used as occasions where he would have outlined his vision for the ANC and the country, not just for the ANC. In other words, it was understood that he is president of the ANC would lead to the presidency of the country. Do you remember the president saying that? That was his evidence?
Yes, I do remember that.
Yes. All right. Okay, let's leave out some of these details. Yes. Then let's go right through to 5.22. That's many pages. Oh, after. After analyzing a whole lot of things and emails and what have you, then you say at 5.2.22. Okay, sure, I'll just read it because while we're waiting. I'm sure, Mr. Matabuka, you don't need to see it on the screen because your memory will be fresher than all of us on this. It says, President Ramaphosa received, quote, assistance from any source other than the member's party, which benefits the member in his or her personal and private capacity, because as presidential candidate for the ANC political party, he received campaign contributions which benefited him in his personal capacity. Being the deputy president of the country and a member of parliament at the time, President Ramaphosa was therefore duty-bound to declare financial benefit accruing to him from the campaign, from campaign activities. And I think that's just important for two reasons. Your finding, is it not true, was not based on President Ramaphosa as president of the country, which he was by the time you were investigating. Because we all, well, no, we don't all know, we all should know that the president is not a member of parliament. But it was based at a time when he was only the deputy president of the country and then MP, hence the declaration obligations applied to him, correct?
Correct, Bimbo.
Right. So in the run-up to the ANC conference of 2017, he was the deputy president of the country and a member of parliament, correct?
That is correct.
And then 5.2.24, this point we've already made, but just for the sake of completion, he said, I have evidence which indicates that some of the money collected through the CR17 campaign trust account was transferred into the Cyril Ramaphosa Foundation account. That came from your, that evidence that's making noise for us, correct?
Correct. But the evidence is not here. This is just my file.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Maybe that point, can you take a break?
Okay.
Before somebody else forces us to take a break.
Yes, I know. Can I just ask one question, just so that I don't come back to this? I know that that time is coming. Yes, okay, just the last part, go to 5.3.10.25. Yes, okay, I'll read these paragraphs together to save time so that we go to the break and then you just confirm, that completes the picture, then we'll come back and deal with the judgment. 5.3.10.25 says, notwithstanding the unanimous statements by the CR17 campaign managers to me, that means to you, all of you, that it had been agreed that the identities of the donors and the amounts donated by them should not be disclosed to the President Ramaphosa, evidence adduced has revealed the contrary. So here you were referring to the denials by the I almost blame the evidence leaders in vain. By the campaign managers, evidence at your disposal that revealed that those denials were not true, correct?
That is correct.
And this is an important factor we will deal with when we deal with the judgment. And then it says, you say, evidence adduced in the form of emails, invitations, and instructions confirm that President Ramaphosa was constantly informed of the activities of the CR17 campaign by the campaign managers, whereupon his advice and approval on specific matters would from time to time be sought. Did that also come from the evidence?
Yes, that is true.
And then the last one says, I have therefore established that in addition to having met with the potential donors during the banquet functions, where he delivered keynote addresses, evidence further confirmed that President Ramaphosa had had further and broader interactions with the donors, some of whom he knew very well. So from the evidence you had, it was clear that this version that the president was, shielded from knowing the donors. Because remember, that's where the crux of the corruption or potential corruption charges come from. That I will donate, and then because he knows that I donated to his campaign, he will remember me, quote unquote, when he becomes the president. That the version that was prevented by this Chinese wall, quote unquote, between him and the donations was actually false, correct?
There are no comment there.
No, okay, I'll put it in a more palatable way. The evidence before you showed that the version of the president, let me put it positively. It showed that he, in addition to having met with potential donors, where he delivered keynote addresses, that he had had further broader interactions with the donors, some of whom he knew very well. That is what was revealed by your evidence, correct?
That is correct, yes.
Thank you. Then there you have the evidence of Mr. Andy Ramaphosa. We won't go into that. Chairperson, yes, that's the... Oh, sorry. I have just one more. When we come back from the break, I'll just refer you to one more section and then we'll go to the judgment of the Constitutional Court. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. We'll pause there for a 15 minutes break and be back after 15 minutes. Thank you.
Recording stopped.